My Surface is awesome. Surface is the best.
Great. Well, thank you, Ari. We're rolling now. And would you tell me what the date and the time is?
Sure. May 12th, 2020, 5:41 p.m.
Very good. And you have read the informed consent and signed it?
Yeah, the one that you sent me through email? Yeah, I'll send that along.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Am I suddenly blue?
I do see a blue tint on the screen there.
I don't know how I did that. I wonder if that's because I, like, disconnected my keyboard and added it back. Who knows? Smile and nod.
It's very film noir.
There's like a a film filter. I don't know what turned on the filter. This is weird. Did I do it? Here, I'll stop my video and start it again.
There, that's better.
Technology, man.
That's better. I just found out I was palm swiping my phone for years. I've got a Note 8, and I didn't know what was causing it. So there's always room to grow, I guess.
Oh, man.
So, Ari, will you tell me your full name, please?
Yeah, Ari Rahimzadeh.
And what are the primary things you do on a day-to-day basis? For example, in your job, your extracurricular activities?
Sure. So by day, I'm a software engineer. By night, I am a software engineer.
And where do you live?
I live in Fishers, Indiana.
Very good. What's it like to live there?
It's wonderful. It's one of the top 10 places to live in the United, to raise a family in the United States, according to Money Magazine. That's kind of neat. Who would think a small town in, well, now it's a city. You know, we have almost 100,000 people but I grew up here. It's, this like all of this, what? Yeah, it's super modern, and it's like a great school system, and it's so quiet. There's all these things to do, and it's really neat. I used to live in Los Gatos, California, and this reminds me of Los Gatos just without the weather, and without the beaches being about 20, 30 minutes away, which would have been cool. But, yeah, whatever. I didn't go to the beaches that much when I was in Los Gatos either. So.
When you first learned about COVID-19, what were your thoughts about it?
I wasn't sure what to think. I mean, it sounded like something that was spreading. I'm like, well, eventually this is going to come over here. I don't know if we're doing anything about it, but we've got – smart people. So I thought we would be prepared for it. The stay-at-home orders and everything made sense. Like, when I was trying to hear about that overseas, I'm like, well, that's probably going to come over here. But, yeah, I wouldn't listen to anything the president said. The different lie every time, so.
Well, that's a segue into the next question. Have your thoughts changed since then?
About what?
COVID-19.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if my thoughts have changed other than my awareness has. My thoughts about I'm not a medical doctor, so if this is going to come over here, it's going to come over here. How contagious it was, I was certainly curious about that. Reporting seemed relatively consistent. So how it infected people, the respiratory issues, et cetera, who was at risk and so forth. That all made sense. For the most part, that was a consistent message. Yeah. And I have family that's immunocompromised. So I was certainly concerned about it. And, from the beginning, like in March, when they started talking about social distancing being a thing, I did it. Yeah. And I have masks at home. I didn't buy into any of the run on toilet paper. I ran a bunch of jokes about that. Like, I put toilet paper in my refrigerator. I took photos of this is what's for dinner. Yeah. And I showed how I had, cut up, pieces of toilet paper, and then I should have put like sauce on it and everything and maybe some pasta, because it would have been funny. But a lot of people thought it was cute. And I'm like, yeah, but we still have to take this really seriously. The other scary part is just I've got a lot of involvement with public safety, and I feared for them. You know, just where they are in the front lines of all this. They got, you know, just imagine a police officer that has to pull people over all day. You don't know if they have something. I even had my own concerns, cause I like Asian food, you know, and here I'm hearing about all this stuff about, you know, it started in Wuhan, et cetera. And, yeah, you know, I know that, yeah, you know, people travel all the time back and forth between China and, yeah, you know, Japan and Vietnam and Korea, et cetera. And I shop at all those grocery stores. So I was curious, like, if I had like a sore throat, did I have COVID? So I had like a fever one day, and it ended up going down, but it wasn't COVID. I was at like 99 or something, but finding information was very hard, especially locally. Because the message you would hear from the federal government, because the states hadn't really gotten involved yet, this was back in mid-March, I thought I had it, you know, like, oh no, I have a fever, therefore I might have it because I went shopping at an Asian grocery, and who knows who I was exposed to if that's where the majority of it comes from. And I was like, oh shit, what do I do? And I could not get an answer. Like, you know, the government was saying, hey, just call your doctor, you can get a test. So I call my doctor, they're like, no, we can't help you. Here, call this 800 number. I was on the phone for like an hour with the 800 number for Ascension Health. And all they're doing is advertising that you can go sign up for a reduced fee to get a doctor's visit online. And it was just like, I was so confused. And the federal messaging is still like bonkers. You know, you don't know, there's no federal response that I could go to a site and go, here's how you get tested. Here's how you protect your loved ones. Nothing like that. It's just, no, everything's good. You know, on one side through press conferences, and then, whoa, don't open yet. From the scientists in the room, which as an engineer throws me off tremendously. So our city actually took the lead on all this stuff. And in Fishers, every resident can get tested for free, whether you have symptoms or not. And all you do is go online, take an assessment, and that's all you do. Yeah, and you go get tested, and no charge. And so I ended up getting involved with that, actually. So the app that they use to scan the patients and assign the tests, the survey here and the test here, I wrote the app that ties those two together. So we have zero issues tying people to their tests. It's awesome. I think we've got, what, over 1,200 tests already? Have already been taken? Yeah, that's pretty neat.
What issues have most concerned you about the COVID-19 pandemic?
I think primarily, what happens if my family gets it, and what happens if I get it and I could infect someone and not know? I think that's the scariest stuff. Yeah.
How has COVID-19 affected your job?
So I'm already a remote employee, so this didn't really change much for me. The weird thing, though, is that when at the end of the day, I want to go out because I've been home all day, and now I can't go out. Yeah, it's not like prison or anything. I mean, I've got, you know, plenty of entertainment and plenty of bourbon, right? but there's two companies. I have a full-time operation that I work for, and then I have my side business where all my intellectual property stuff goes through. So the company I work for has they've brought everyone to be remote. So I actually got to coach people on being remote, which was cool. You know, like how to avoid distractions, et cetera, you know. but then it didn't really affect, you know, like my regular intellectual property business, just because that was just consulting anyway. You know, now, to be fair, I'm a software engineer. I can do my job anywhere. I don't have to be on site. I will revisit, though, that now that I have seasonal allergies, I keep wondering, are my allergies allergies or are they COVID? Or are they something else? And that's a little scary. Like, I don't, maybe not scary, like, it doesn't keep me up at night, but knowing there isn't a cure or a vaccine, certainly bothers me, because then I wonder, okay, if my nose is running and, you know, my family wants to do something, should I go do it? Yeah. Is that the responsible thing to do? But, you know, we've been making do. Yeah.
How has COVID-19 changed your employment status?
Not at all.
And what concerns do you have about the effects of COVID-19 on your employment and more broadly on the economy?
On my employment, we've already had conversations and the company's doing fine, because we're not strongly aligned with, you know, like healthcare. We're not strongly aligned with healthcare, but like, you know, like event planning or anything like that. You know, we do a lot of work that just simply isn't affected by this. It didn't affect my consulting really at all, although I did have, oddly enough, some event planning stuff, and that got canceled. Yeah, couldn't do that work. And what was the second half of your question?
Oh, and on in the economy more broadly.
I think it absolutely is decimating the economy. Having owned a small business, I can't imagine being closed for 2 months. I don't think a lot of small businesses have that kind of cash just sitting around. You know, it's a, that's rough. And I don't know that the PPP or whatever will solve all that. Although I've talked with some small businesses that have certainly said it's helped them if they've gotten it, but there was a lot of confusion to get it. I've met at least one person that simply took $30,000 from the government, but that wasn't their actual salary. So, you know, they found free money from the government and said, hey, you know, my wife did this, you know, $15,000 a month, you know, for 2 months, free and clear. And I'm thinking to myself, what if you get audited? What if they look at your salary, you know, I mean, and realize you didn't have that? You're going to have to pay that back. The 30 grand's going to have to go somewhere. So I hope you invested it. but from the, on the economy side of things, I think it's going to be horrifying. Like, we haven't even seen how bad this is yet. That's going to catch up 60 days from now, 6 months from now, the number of closures. I feel that your hometown landscape is just going to be very different, especially in poorer parts of America. Smaller towns, you know, like really small, just, you know, where you had to drive, you know, like an hour to get to work, that kind of thing, when you couldn't go to work now. It just, it dries up the tax base. So cities are going to have a lot of trouble. Towns are going to have a lot of trouble. States are going to have a lot of trouble from the lack of tax flow. You know, just this, you know, being, you know, half the business is being closed for 2 months. It affects everyone. The dollar stops flowing. So, scary stuff. Really scary stuff.
How has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the employment of people that you know personally?
Those that had hourly jobs in, like, restaurants and bars, which, of course, you know, me working from home all day, I go out at night. So you meet all these people. All of them are furloughed or laid off. And in some cases, you know, the businesses that hired them are now out of business. Like, they just said, look, we're not going to reopen. Because there's, you know, you've got to ramp back up. You got to, you know, right now you'd have 50% revenue. It's tough. You know, it's making that work is hard. Your leases aren't going to go down. Your rent's not going to go down, and no one's stepping in to help on the rent side to say, look, you know, we're going to mandate that all rent must be 50%. And the landlords, you know, aren't jerks for saying that they want to get paid. I mean, they have a mortgage they have to pay. I mean, that's what you're doing. So the those I knew that had hourly jobs have not done well. And there's, you know, a lot of my, you know, a lot of my friends though are also software engineers. They weren't affected by this. It's just work from home and do whatever you need to do, you know, and eventually we'll go back to normal. But, you know, the more technical jobs that aren't affected by that, I think it's, sometimes it can be hard to appreciate how difficult it is to, you know, to have to work on tips. If you're a bartender, you made $60,000 a year, let's say, with your tips from a nice restaurant. Now you're at zero. Yeah. And you got to go on unemployment. You got, like, suddenly your health insurance isn't paid for. Like, you only have basic Medicaid. Yeah. Your rent is still due. Your car payments are still due. If you and your, you know, let's say you're married, you know, your wife, husband, whatever, also doesn't have a job, but you got kids to feed and kids don't understand this. Oh my gosh. You know, the mental health aspects of this are just tremendous. So yeah, I, yes, it's affected the people to answer your question, you know, that I know that would normally be affected by something like this. Yeah. I'm curious if you have any questions about how students are affected by this.
Well, there are basically eight categories, I think, and we've gone through the background questions and the employment, and the next section is family and household. Then there's community and health and information and government.
Cool. Hold on, I'm going to grab my dog a treat.
And the future.
Give me one moment.
Sure.
Here, lady. Oh, hello. I'm back.
Okay. So how has COVID-19 affected you and or your family's day-to-day activities? And, you know, there's some redundancy and overlap in these questions.
Sure. It's curtailed them, you know, and that I can't go out or I generally can't go do in the beginning. So this has our isolation from each other has scaled back. So we were very careful in the beginning. So like for weeks, I wouldn't go over to see my mom. I'm like, nope, you're going to have to wait till this is over. Until we understand this, this will be a problem, you know, for us to get together. So being Jewish, we had Passover. Yeah. I don't know if you're Christian or what have you. So Easter was probably an issue if you're Christian or Catholic. But as a Jew, I couldn't go over to my mother's house for Passover. I couldn't do it. So virtual meetings has definitely made the difference. And then as it got warmer outside and we could actually walk outside instead of in the nice, the cold Indiana weather. I found that, you know, hey, you know, you could practice social distancing and be outside. So did that more and more. And I think that as more people kind of got used to that, and we started getting more information about how this transmits, how you can protect yourself, and the loosening of restrictions, like travel restrictions and such, that's when we started being able to go and see each other, but we would still stand distanced. Yeah. And especially with like the Fisher's tests. Yeah. We all got tested. So like when I found out I was negative, you know, at the time, right? I mean, this a few days ago, I was negative. Who knows now? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. That gave me some solace Yeah, but the cool thing is, like, contact tracing going with it. Yeah.
How are you managing your day-to-day activities in your household?
Same as before. I think I drink more.
I've heard that I read this somewhere that alcohol sales have gone up 300%.
Mm-hmm.
So, Solange.
Yes, Solange, kanpai. Well, you know, that being said, I didn't have anything else to do at night. You know, I don't like sitting on Xbox and playing games. I'm okay with reading, you know. I like audiobooks. Now that it's nice outside, you know, I go on bike rides. But, you know, when it's cold outside and you can't go out anywhere, you can't drive anywhere. You can go sit at Starbucks and work on something. What do you have to do at home? Eat, drink, you know, I mean. I guess I could work out, but I.
That is true.
Yeah, I got a gym membership for that, which I can't use right now. All right.
Well, you've touched on this a little bit. How has the COVID-19 outbreak affected how you interact and communicate with family and friends?
Yeah, it's gone super virtual. My kid and I just communicate text and phone anyway. Like friends, Zoom meetings. And then once Zoom was no longer free, we switched to like FaceTime and Messenger and Google Meet and Uber Conference, just because Zoom was great till it wasn't free. Yeah, there's so many free alternatives. Yeah.
Yeah. What have been your biggest challenges that you've faced so far during the outbreak?
I don't think I've had any major challenges. It's an interruption to my daily routine. Like, my routine used to be go to Starbucks, meet with friends, go to work, and then, you know, at night watch TV, maybe go out with friends. But now it's, I still do the coffee thing in the morning, but my friend and I pull up in our cars next to each other. You know, when it was cold, and now that it's warm outside, we meet over in the city hall area, you know, and walk the area. So we drink coffee. We just changed the locale. That worked out pretty well. Nighttime is different. I think, you know, the ability to connect with your friends, the ability to go to movies, the ability to shop if you need to. I mean, I'm almost tired of the inside of Costco. It's somewhere to go. Yeah, I want to be out of the house. That's, yeah, and I can't imagine the people that aren't used to working from home, being forced to go home and just, you know, especially if you got kids. Yeah, it's got to be great to be with your kids all day, but sometimes it's got to be good to go to the office. And, oh, man, you know, you can't get away from it. So, yeah, I mean, you might ask this in other questions, but the mental health issue is definitely a thing. I know people that are just going nuts because they're so stir crazy. And, you know, it weighs down on you. And if you are having, like, relationship difficulty at this time, ooh, it's like going on a vacation that you can't fly home from until someone tells you you can. It's like your own reality show. Yeah. You know? You gotta wait to get booted off.
What have you, your family, and your friends done for recreation? And you've touched on this, but feel free to include detail about the shows, the games, any particular books.
Yeah, I've caught up on more shows. I haven't seen Tiger King. But I've definitely caught up on more shows. I haven't found that, you know, my friends, you know, and I usually didn't play games together, so that hasn't become some new pastime. So it's turned into, you know, meet socially and drink, you know, and have conversation. Because I think what we miss the most really is just the conversation amongst friends.
How has the COVID-19 outbreak affected your community? And since you touched on Fishers a little bit and the app that's been developed there, which, by the way, I hope gets a lot of replication around the country. Remember, you may be part of communities including school, and this could touch on students, club, church, job, et cetera. You're welcome to speak about any and all of these communities.
So what's the question? I'm not sure.
How has COVID-19 affected your community?
Oh, well, from a few different perspectives, I mean, from a government perspective, it's cut government revenue, but it's also freed up the ability to clean up the roads. You know, like they can do road projects right now and not really worry about closing the roads. It's kind of a good thing. I'll bet a lot of government projects end up catching up when there's no traffic, at least public works projects. I mentor a lot of kids, and this is hard on them. You know, they're cool with being at home, but, you know, like the whole school situation is weird. Like you have school really 3 days of the week and then assignments, and then it gets you have to turn them in by Monday. Like, I don't even fully understand it, but I'm like, oh, okay, well, as long as it works for you. I'm super fearful for the kids that don't have internet at home. What about all the kids that don't have internet, that can't do e-learning? What do? I mean, do you fail? You can't go to a library. Those are closed. You can't go to Starbucks or anywhere that has free Wi-Fi. Those are closed. Comcast goes and says, hey, you know, if you're in a neighborhood with Comcast, you're going to have free internet because we're going to open up all the Xfinity hotspots. Well, Xfinity hotspots aren't in the poorer parts of town. So you're disadvantaged even during the pandemic because none of the free services going to the nicer communities, you know, nicer being relative or subjective, you don't get any of those benefits. And you're still stuck at home with the kids. You can't get them fed because, you know, maybe if they were on free or reduced meals, how do you feed your kids? You have the same lack of money and resources that you had before, but now you have hungry mouths that want to be fed, and they don't understand what a pandemic means. So I'm surprised that the crime rate has been as low as it has been. Yeah, just – yeah, I don't know. Or maybe we just don't see it. Yeah. I'm surprised that the shootings didn't go down in Indiana, like the shootings downtown. So I guess drug dealers still have their same issues. It's hard on the kids. It's really hard on the kids. There's, you know, the seniors that don't get to go to a graduation, you know, not just in high school, but in college. Yeah, it's really rough, and it's really, I know from, you know, a city government perspective, they've been firing on all cylinders to try figuring out how they're gonna, you know, how do you help the local businesses? Yeah, because I mean they're part of your lifeblood, not just your tax base as the citizenry, but the all those businesses bring in revenue that, you know, pays for everything in the various, you know, municipalities we've got, and you know they're. You know, I just can't speak higher than, you know, what Fishers is doing. It's definitely talk with some of them. Talk with like Scott Fadness and Steve Arusa and, you know, about their approaches. It's been really interesting.
What has been your direct experience, meaning you or anyone you know, with the COVID-19 outbreak sickness?
I've had one family member get it twice, a doctor, an unrelated family member, so like an uncle of an uncle that isn't related to me by blood, or a brother of an uncle not related to me by blood. So in the family, but not, you know, blood related in any way. He died of COVID complications from it on top of everything else. At work, one of our, at least one of our employees, his father passed away from it. So it's definitely affecting people. I mean, that I know. And some friends of mine have had it. I just had a social with one of them. I didn't know. They didn't. I just like found out. It's like, oh yeah, I had it. It was terrible. You're like, what? I mean, it's not like it's killed everyone. I mean, the majority of people live, but that doesn't make the other deaths, better in any way.
You touched on this, but is there anything that you'd like to add about the way COVID-19 is affecting people's mental health or physical health?
Well, it's certainly affecting physical health because you can't go out and work. If you can't go out and work out, you can't go out and work out. You could stay active at home, but I don't think everyone has the means to where they understand how to do that. It depends. But mental health, absolutely, yeah. Oh, but anxiety is huge. I have a number of friends that have anxiety issues right now. Yeah. Anxiety is, I don't know, like, I'd be curious, I don't want to sound like I have a lack of empathy, but I'm curious what the numbers are around the suicide rate, in the past 2 months. That people think this, hey, if this is going to kill me, I'm going to go out on my own terms or something. And I think any bad news is amplified in an environment like this because not only am I, locked up in my fucking house, this happened, And I know I've heard that domestic violence incidents have gone up, which it all makes sense. I mean, you're around someone that you have issues with, and you can't go anywhere else to let out your anger. That's rough. But yeah, I know in Fishers, they've had some mental health, some emails about like what to do, or at least one email. And I've seen, like on Facebook, they have a whole COVID-19, area you can go that I think has resources for this sort of stuff. So that's good. But, you have to, with mental health, you have to want help.
Switching gears now, what has been your primary source of news during the pandemic?
I know I watched a lot of CNN. I read a lot of Drudge Report. MSN News, so like every time I open up my browser, it shows me like what's going on. I would watch some of those the press conferences with Trump. But like as long as he wasn't on, it was it seemed informative. Every time he was on, it was just like, dude, whoa. And then a few weeks into it, they just started turning into campaign rallies. Like it was really nasty. Just the way he was treating the reporters. They're just there to do their job. And I think if he wasn't on TV, it would be a lot easier to think that we have something good going on. But news-wise, I'd read whatever articles there were. I read about the comparisons to the 1918, the Spanish flu. Was that 18 or 17? 18, right?
Actually, it spanned multiple years. It really spanned 3 years. It began in 17, but 18 is the predominant year of that pandemic.
Okay. So like 17 through 20, 17 through 19? Okay.
17 through 19.
So it's been interesting to learn about this. So there's been the news, but also kind of fact-checking it all. So also hitting like PolitiFact, because there's been a lot of politics around this. Attempting to read the bill, like the stimulus bill. Mm. So when when news coverage would come out, I'd try to hit a few different sites to see if I could find the text of the bill for the stimulus package, because hey, that's a lot of, it feels good to say $300-400 billion. That's a lot of money. And it's gotta come from someone, That's rough.
Yeah. So you alluded there to sort of how your news consumption has evolved during this. Is there anything else that's changed about it during the pandemic?
I think recently I've watched less of it. I read more, watch less. Just to get more information. Yeah.
Do you think there are important issues that the media is not covering?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like the whole all the pandemic stuff. I think they're covering in earnest. Yeah. And I used to be in the press, years ago, not political press, but technology press. And asking people questions is part of your job. So, but I'd rather read like the written up version of things because you've thought about it more. But the ad hoc interaction is always interesting to me because that's when you get to see how people lie. Because you can polish the facts and your statements, when it's being written later. But yeah, that's why the press conferences from the very beginning out of the White House were just horrifying. I'm spacing on what the original question.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It happens.
Not my hubby would pick up there.
Hey, wait, what was the question again, though?
How has your news sourcing? Oh, no, I'm sorry.
No, there's the one after.
What do you think are important issues that the media may or may not be covering?
So I think the problem is that this covers a lot. This obscures a whole bunch of stuff. Look at all the regulations, just from a government perspective, like all the regulations that were being passed or rescinded, under the cover of this, that's scary. Like the political campaigns have been really interesting. It's funny how like politically charged I've been during this administration. Like I rarely get that way. And this one just has me. I'm like, man, gosh, we gotta vote. The Social Security changes, like all the stuff coming out of Congress, where good bills from both sides of the House are coming into the Senate and just dying because we're the majority. We're not going to pass it, until the status quo changes. Whoa. But no one's covering that, right? Because everyone's fearing for their lives. The people not getting food right now, I don't feel that's being covered in earnest. Bringing light to, all this food waste that we've got right now. How could you get that food into people's hands to help them? It turns into, unfortunately, the Trump show, because he's always in his overall fears of becoming irrelevant. So just simply saying something stupid or just saying anything at all gets, his headlines. And that detracts from all the other things, like here's where, we could have all these, what could, media do to help with mental health? Like we'll do a whole town hall once a week on mental health and how you can help yourself, But that being said, there's a lot of stuff that's getting covered, not covered up, but it's lost in the noise. And that's kind of been the way it is this entire administration, because it's always like, Trump said this, Kushner did that. It's like, but what about all the other stuff, that's happening in all the other states and, just locally, good things that are happening, bad things that are happening, everything in between, interesting acquisitions, new technologies that are saving lives. It's too much. But aside from all of that, like if you ignore the news, you don't tune into effectively what's now entertainment. you'll find that our communities have really come together. Yeah, like if you look past all the negativity, yeah, I have found that the communities have definitely done what they can, especially local governments, to try making things work, and helping their constituents. And I'm thankful to see that, because I was almost convinced that I was gone in this country. It was sad.
Well, I appreciate you hanging in with me. We've got about 5 more questions.
Sure.
And this is another segue that just worked out really well when you're speaking of local government, where the rubber literally hits the road. How many municipal leaders and government officials in your community responded to the outbreak? And how did they respond?
I think I've already answered that.
Yeah. I know you spoke earlier of fishers and specific names, so we'll cover that. We'll consider that covered. Do you have any thoughts on the differences in response among local, state, and federal levels to the crisis?
Yeah, so local, I think it depends. I think me personally, I'm spoiled because I live in a city that took initiative. I don't feel all local governments have the means that my government does, my local government, or, are as forward thinking, and that's a byproduct of not just politics, but, just money and tax base, et cetera, So the local governments, I think, are trying to do everything they can, and they're trying to coordinate with the states. And it feels like, very few people had a plan about how this was going to work, So from the state level, I think, the communication with the local governments has been difficult, but I think they're still working towards being effective. It's not like a massive failure across the board. And I think our federal response is the larger version of that problem. Like, so local, you can control your destiny as long as you've got some funding from the state and you buy tests, et cetera, set up testing centers, et cetera, and let that grow organically. And you can do that up to, from the local level to the state level, and now you've covered your state. But every state has to do that. Kind of like a virus, starts small and then spreads, right? Just like the pandemic. You got to do the same thing with your testing. You got to start somewhere and then let it expand. I feel that that's been delayed partially because our federal government was absolutely unprepared. And every time they tried sending a message out, the administration got in the way going, whoa, 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 this will affect our election chances in November, so shut up. So the people who know what they're doing, and being an engineer, I imagine I could think like a medical doctor in this case and go, whoa, wait, I'm the doctor that's in charge of all this stuff. Let me do my job. I get that you want to look good. I get it. I can't make you look good when people are dying. I can't do it. Somewhere you have to draw the line. Well, wait. We have to put the marketing spin on this. So I think the federal government's infighting of between people who know what they're doing and then the administration, which wants to look like they're 100% in control, that was infectious across all the states that were looking for guidance and couldn't get guidance. And so finally, I think after a few weeks of waiting for guidance, other than saying we need tests and funds, et cetera, to start our efforts, and they got nothing out of it, they finally said, screw it. And you can see the local governments got together and the state governments got together. And I think, I don't know if you've seen the maps of the PACs that formed like our new American colonies, of building out some way. We got to save people before they die. Let the administration do whatever it's doing. Just at this point, just ignore them, because they're ignoring us anyway. I'll pounce on blue states, but I'll give money to red states and I'll put someone in charge that'll make sure that happens. Wait, politics needs to be put aside for people's lives, and that hasn't happened on the federal level. But on the state level, I think the smart states have prioritized life and are doing good things, and you can see that happening. Some stragglers, but they'll come around. I mean, sometimes, yeah, they might come around because enough people are dying, unfortunately. But yeah, some people don't want to learn their lesson.
Well, the final three questions have to do with the future, Ari. How has your experience transformed how you think about family, friends, and community?
It hasn't changed my thought about family. I don't think it's really changed my thoughts about friends, but how we can get together. I think, you know, the connectedness of friends, I think you find who wants to actually communicate with you and maintain that friendship. So that was good to see. And you're saying, was the third one community?
Family, friends, community.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised to see it was refreshing to see my community come together. I think people wanted to see good things happen. It showed me how many people in this, not just, you know, like fishers, but just everywhere, don't give a shit. like all the people not wearing masks, all the people going out with like their kids, and, you know, their kids are coughing over everything and screaming and touching everything. And, you know, kids touch everything and not reining them in. So I found a lot more people, like in the past couple weeks with the death count going up so much, wearing masks now. Whereas like 4 weeks ago, no. People are like, meh, whatever, especially younger people. Meh. You know, we don't care. You know, you keep hearing about the teenagers getting, because it wasn't the first time. You know, it seems there's been a number of incidents where kids have gone into stores and just started fake coughing on people, you know, thinking it's funny. Yeah, so I've found that, you know, it doesn't matter what community you're in, there's people who don't care about other people. But I have found other people going, why aren't you wearing a mask? And they'll say something, which I think is good. Yeah, sometimes you need to call people out.
Knowing what you know now, what do you think that individuals, communities, or governments need to keep in mind for the future?
Have a retrospective on this and strongly document what went right and what went wrong and make sure that that's part of a response plan. I mean, I don't know that you needed a pandemic response team working 24/7, right, around the clock prior to this happening. But we should have been prepared. We shouldn't have downplayed it. We shouldn't have played the blame game. Blame didn't solve anything. So, yeah. Anytime you blame, usually, you know, 99%+ of the time, you've got some blame yourself. And had we just taken this seriously, I think we'd be in much better shape. So now that we've gone, well, I mean, we're not through this yet, but when we have gone through it, thankfully, we're in the age of information. And hopefully, that information is stored in such a way that we can plan this out in the future and model it out, you know, coming out with a better way of looking at, you know, how we could approach this using all the tools that we have at our disposal today. Because I'm surprised at being in this land with all the technology that we have, all the top minds around the world, that we had nothing. I mean, we were the emperor has no clothes. We were caught naked by a robber, you know, coming out of the shower, you know, like we didn't realize we needed locks on the doors or something. You know, it was just like, what the heck? I'm embarrassed that we keep playing up that we've, yeah, that, you know, if you look at the global numbers, we're more than 25% of the cases and deaths globally. And everyone uses our technology to communicate. Our books, our scientists. Yeah, I mean, how is this us? Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's embarrassing to be an American. I'm not embarrassed to be an American. I'm embarrassed about our government, because all they do is talk about, hey, you should give us credit for how well we've done. Why? Why? Yeah, if you do a really shitty job, why do you deserve credit for that? Well, you know, not as many people are dying. Oh, okay. So like we have a control group and who got the placebo? I don't understand. I never thought it would be this high, that high of a percentage. Just as an American and just knowing what we have access to. Yeah. Just even the data we have access to that we could, like the models have been relatively accurate. I don't know if you've looked at the models.
I've looked at several. They're more accurate than other sources. They're all predicated on whatever they were based on.
Yeah, they're tracking very well. I mean, horrifying numbers, but still, you know, where do we have, don't we have teams of people like this that could do something? Yeah, what the hell? But instead, what we were stuck with forget that they started making, you know, changes in the beginning of March. Imagine just knowing what you've seen, the infighting that must have occurred in January and February. Of, we have to do something. No. It'll make us look bad. I mean, it's clear that that was happening. And I'm like, oh my gosh. The ego that killed so much people. It wasn't just Trump. I mean, it was just his entire administration hiding it all. It's sad. And people died because of it. Unbelievable, yeah. And people still die, which I'm just thankful. Like, you know, getting back to your other question, that the local governments and the states are taking over and saying, you know what, let the kids go play. Send us money. Fine, if that's what you're only good at is sending money, you know, you're not even good at that, and you want your name on it, so you can get credit. Good for you. Good. Leave us alone. Yeah, you know, smile and nod. You do your thing. We're going to go and save our citizens because you're clueless. We'll listen to, like, the two people on your team that seem to know what they're talking about. But everybody else, just stay away. Stay away. You know, stay off TV. Stay away from us. You're confusing all of our citizenry. I mean, you're just absolute lack of leadership driven by ego. It's just, ugh. It destroys organizations, and it could destroy our country. So I'm glad that they're just mutinying for the most part. Some aren't.
Well, final question. Yeah. Are there any other thoughts you'd like to add before we close here, Ari?
Not really. I think I've gone off on enough tangents. I hope you and your family are safe. And that's... Yeah,
well,
I hope you haven't lost anyone. Yeah, knock on wood. And
thank you.
We'll get through this.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate your willingness to do this. I think the repository of stories that we have at the end of this will be very important. And one of the aims of the COVID-19 Oral History Project is to get the metadata. For example, the transcript that will come out of this interview is going to be produced by AI. You know, there are multiple universities involved in this. You probably checked it out on the website. So once I get this uploaded, I'll let you know. And I'm right now I'm batching them, so I haven't really done any uploads yet. So I'll probably get a couple more interviews under my belt, but I'll let you know when that's been done, and I'll keep in touch along the way. Awesome. But I hope that these kinds of thoughts really help solve policy going forward. And the project has gone international now.
Oh, wonderful. So, congrats.
So we'll see where it goes. And we will have a good record, at least from this point of view. The problem is there was a lot of documentation about 1918, but it happened 100 years ago, so it's not top of mind. And things have changed so much.
This is really helpful. Yeah. I mean, just think, like, you're recording this right now, and you're not even thinking about running out of tape.
Right. Or transcribing.
Yeah. I mean, like, all the technology we have available today, man, I mean, and who knows? I mean, just imagine this 100 years from now. Yeah. Wow. How this technology could help us. But who knows? Yeah, we'll probably ignore it again.
But you know, we might figure out a way to ruin it. Yeah. Being human.
History repeats itself, friend.
Anyway, thank you so much for your time, and I will let you know when I get this uploaded into the archive.
Awesome, thanks, Glenda. Much appreciated. Is that how you say your name? Is it Glenda?
Oh, it's Glenda. That was my father's consolation prize since it wasn't a boy. And actually, my daughter's last name is Esmaelzadeh. So I imagine you're Persian somewhere in there.
Yep. Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, take care.
Glenda. Have a good one. Be safe.
You too. Bye.